People love to predict the end of the world, don't they? It's just great fun to be given this incredible insight and wisdom to know when it's all going to end. People have been doing this since long before Jesus, but I thought that I would give you some examples of when the world was supposed to end, and those who, I don't know, spent all their money were kind of disappointed. So the most recent one that you're probably aware of was December 21st last year of 2012. Because the Mayan calendar was coming to an end, there was all this suggestion out there that the world was coming to an end last Christmas, which it didn't. According to Pat Robertson, in 1990, he predicted that the world was coming to an end on April 29th, 2007. That was because prior to that, he had already predicted 1982 as the end of the world, but that didn't happen, so he had to adjust his figuring. According to a whole lot of people, the world was going to end in the year 2000. Some of the people were people of, well, Isaac Newton was pretty sure the world was going to end in 2000. And Sun Myung Moon, the Unification Church, the Moonies, he was convinced it was going to end in the year 2000. Jonathan Edwards, who was a very popular 18th century preacher, he thought the year 2000 was the end. Jerry Falwell, another guy, Timothy LaHaye, who I'll get to in a minute. In 1836, the world was supposed to end. That's according to John Wesley, one of the fathers of one of our kind of wings of Protestantism in the world today. He was pretty sure 1836 was it. That was a bad decision for this church to build a church. That's when they established this church, the year the world was going to end. I don't know what they were thinking. Christopher Columbus, he had two possible dates, either 1656 or 1658. He figured the world was going to end one of those 2 years. Botticelli, famous painter, he was convinced the world was going to end in 1504. And it goes back and back and back. People have always been trying to predict the end of the world. They look for clues. They look for numbers. They try and add this to this and make it all make sense so that they can say, we know when the world is going to end. People have been fascinated by this idea. Again, back to Timothy LaHaye. He wrote the whole series of books called the Left Behind series. Are you familiar with that? Back in kind of the 90s, it was very, very popular. Don't read them. And don't watch the movies. They're such bad movies. But they also, they speak to this desire we have to know secret things, like when the world's going to end. But there have been lots of better movies than the Left Behind movies who all play with the idea of the end of the world. There's just a sampling of some movie posters up there. And they're fun movies. Like they're full of action and heroes and the world is coming to an end and usually someone swoops in. Usually it's Will Smith. I don't know why he plays all these movies, but swoops in and saves the day so it doesn't quite end, or it looks different. But we have this fascination with the end of the world. If you were going to ask a group of youth what they want to study in a Bible study, they usually want to talk about sex and they usually want to talk about Revelation and the end of the world. Those are the two top ones that come up over and over again for people in youth ministry. And we read words like those in Luke 21 that Nancy just read for us. And then we look around at the world and we start to think, maybe Jesus was talking about our time right here and now. And thinking about the disasters that have struck our world just this year, just in 2013. And just have a look at some of this. Hear again what Jesus said. He said, nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be great earthquakes and in various places famines and plagues. And there will be dreadful portents and great signs from heaven. Wow, could be today, eh? Or the 1600s or the 1200s or the first century or 500 BC. And if that's not enough, Jesus goes on to say this specifically to the disciples he's talking to. They will arrest you and persecute you. They will hand you over to synagogues and prisons. You will be brought before kings and governors because of my name. In other words, everything in the world is going to fall apart, and your lives are going to be awful too. All because you follow me. It's one of Jesus' more cheery messages in the Bible. This whole idea of being persecuted as Christians was really timely in Luke's gospel, because Luke wrote at a time when Christians were finding themselves on trial, were finding themselves martyred, were finding themselves put in great big arenas to fight off bears and other wild animals. They could listen back to what Jesus had said and at least take comfort in the fact that Jesus knew things were going to be hard for them. They hadn't been sold a bill of goods. They hadn't bought into the idea that if you just follow Jesus, everything nice will come your way. They knew there was a huge cost to following Jesus. Jesus said it from the beginning, and it was their experience. Right now, in our day and age, maybe not as much in our corner of the world, but in many other places of the world, Christians are experiencing the same kind of things. There are lots of stories coming out of Egypt this fall about Christians being attacked and killed, churches being burnt down. I wanted to tell you stories about two people that I'm at school with. His name is Yuri, and Yuri is a pastor in Poland. Poland, until recently, was a communist country, but also a Catholic country, a weird kind of bent on Catholicism because it fit with communism. But to be Polish always meant that you were communist, and it always meant that you were Catholic. Yuri's dad was a Baptist pastor in Poland. It wasn't just the Baptist thing, but the whole not Catholic, not communist thing was a problem. So much so that Yuri's mom got sent to Siberia for 7 years, where she kind of wasted away in a prison in kind of one of the worst places of the world. His sister was kicked out of school simply because her dad was a Baptist pastor. His dad endured all sorts of persecution and trials and mockery and humiliations. It was not an easy thing, and yet they continued on in their faith. And in fact, Yuri himself now is a pastor in Poland, and Poland is no longer communist. And also, for the very first time, it was Yuri's church who was given permission to purchase land to build a building for their church. You see, in Poland, unless you were Catholic, you couldn't own land. You certainly couldn't build a structure like this to worship in. And it's just in the last 20 years that the very first non-Catholic church in Poland was given permission to have land and to build a church. It's an extraordinary move of God. But not for a moment should we think that it's easy to be a Christian. And again, I'm not saying that Catholics aren't Christians, but that the type of Catholicism that was called Catholic in Poland was not really Roman Catholicism. I want to tell you about Mike. Mike lives in Lebanon. And right now in Lebanon, there's an extraordinary number of refugees coming from Syria. And so little Christian churches in Lebanon, where it's not real safe to be Christians to begin with, are opening up their doors to Syrian refugees, most of whom are Muslim. It's the most incredible thing. There's a church in Lebanon that has 50 people in its membership. And they are kind of single-handedly ministering, providing food, providing shelter, helping them find jobs, helping them find a sense of safety and security to over 200 refugees coming to them from Syria. But here's the thing. As we were in class and we were talking about the ethics of doing research and interviewing people, and we were commenting that on permission forms, if you're an American and you are going to ask people to be involved, maybe fill out a survey or anything like that, you have to have permission, and you have to, on the permission form, identify that their results, their answers, might be seen by the government, because the American government has now made it their business that they are allowed to have full access to any American server on the internet. And so we Canadians as well, we have to make sure that if we're using American servers, that we ask for this permission from people as well. Well, Mike, who's in Lebanon, is sitting there saying, we have to have such incredible security on anything that we do over the internet, because if it gets into the wrong hands, he says, the Hezbollah shows up at our door. They come to our church and we're closed down. That's it. It is not safe in Lebanon to be a Christian out loud. So, I mean, his question for the ethics guy was, what are the ethics if I'm doing research in Lebanon? And the poor guy, he lives in Nova Scotia. He didn't know. How do you protect the people who are part of this research? Because it's a very real danger. Jesus was talking about his disciples, and he was talking about Christians all over the world today, that they will arrest you and persecute you. They will hand you over to synagogues and prisons. You'll be brought before kings and governors because of my name. Maybe it's not really any wonder that people read Jesus' words and come to the conclusion that the end of the world must be just around the corner. I mean, you read of all the horrors that are supposed to happen, and then you turn on the news and all the horrors are right there in front of you on the screen. Of course you think, this is what he was talking about. It must be that the end of the world is coming. Except that people have been coming to that conclusion all along, ever since Jesus spoke those words, and so far the world has not ended. You know the story of Henny Penny? The sky is falling. Well, the world is ending. The world is ending. Every once in a while, that takes over the news, the media. We hear it. The world is ending. The world is ending. And people start to get afraid. And people start to panic. And some people start to celebrate. And they say, well, it's about time, because this world is not worth keeping. But the point of Jesus' words was not to predict the end of the world. In both Matthew and Mark's gospel, Jesus also said these words, but about that day and that hour, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. So you've got all these people saying, I can predict, all the clues are in the Bible, I can predict when the world is going to end. And Jesus himself is saying, no, you can't. Nobody knows. The Father alone knows when it's going to happen. He knows what the day is and what the hour is. Nobody else knows. And part of the problem, we get to Greek again and the Greek language again. We forget that the Greeks had two different words, both translated time. When will that time come? There's time, which is chronos, which is about calendars or clocks. What time is it? It's 2:00 in the afternoon. That's chronos time. When is Jesus coming back? September 23rd, 1856. That's chronos time. But Jesus never used chronos time when he talked about when the time would come. He used a different word, kairos. Kairos time isn't restricted to a specific factual time that you can set on a calendar or set on a clock. It's, for example, when we would say, the time will come when. We're not saying it will come on this date. We're just, the time will come when you're going to be sorry for everything that you did. Or when we say, from time to time, things happen. Or at the appropriate time, or at the right time, or in the last times. It's about an age or an era. It's kind of a whole bigger picture of time as just a something out there kind of thing. And when Jesus said, the time is going to come when these things are going to happen, he wasn't setting a date. He wasn't setting a specific time on the clock. He was just saying, hey, the time's going to come. I mean, all he had to do was look around his world. The time's going to come. In fact, the time is already here. He looks at his disciples. He said, the time's going to come. In fact, the time is already here. See, where Luke places this story in his gospel is right before the last moments of Jesus' life. Right before Jesus ends up going to the cross. He knew that was coming. He knew it was only a matter of time before he was finally going to not be able to get away from those who wanted him dead. And he knew the same fate was going to await his disciples. He wasn't predicting the future by looking in a crystal ball. It was just, he had his eyes wide open. He was looking around. He said, the time's going to come when this is going to be your reality. See, the point of Jesus' words in Luke 21 is not to predict the end of the world. So that leaves us with the question of what is his point? Why on earth would he put such confusing words down there if that wasn't his point? So I want to back up and just hear again this passage, and I'm just going to tell it in my own words. It's kind of some bullet points of what's happening. So you've got Jesus and his disciples and various other people, and they're in Jerusalem. They're in the holy city. And they're standing outside the temple. The temple, which is one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. And they're gazing at this extraordinary architecture. They're looking at the beauty of the windows and the stonework and the artistry and the gold, and just everything was absolutely magnificent. And they were in awe of it, as were all the other tourists who were coming to Jerusalem to see the seventh wonder of the world, to see the temple in Jerusalem. It was an extraordinary building. And they're just commenting, wow, what an extraordinary building. Is that place ever beautiful? And so Jesus points to the fact that the temple's beauty is just temporary. And in fact, by the time Luke wrote these words, the temple didn't even exist anymore because the Romans had already destroyed the temple. It wasn't left standing. Jesus had said, it's just temporary. Now again, Jesus wasn't talking about Chronos time. He wasn't saying, and on the date, 70 AD, then this temple is going to be no more. Saying, the time's going to come when this temple's going to be no more. And you didn't have to be Jesus to see where the times were going. You didn't have to be Jesus to know Rome wasn't all that happy with Jerusalem. And the more Jerusalem was causing problems for Rome, the more likely it was going to be that they were going to come in and demolish everything that was Jerusalem, which is the temple. And so he says, listen, this beautiful building is temporary. So the disciples, they do what we do. Well, when's it going to happen? Tell us the date so that we can get ready, so that we can maybe amass an army and protect this beautiful building. And Jesus doesn't tell them. Instead, this is what he says. He says, let me tell you about those days, about that time. Lots of people are going to come along claiming that they've been sent by me and claiming that the end is near. Lots of people are going to say, I had a word from God and the world is ending on December 21st, 2012. So follow me and I will show you the way. There have been some horrors committed in just our living memory. You know, when you think about, some of you don't know the story, but the story of Jim Jones, right? Some horrors that are committed because somebody says, I have come in the name of the Lord and I'm going to tell you when the world's going to end. And sadly, for the people who followed Jim Jones, that's when the world did end. Some people are highly charismatic, and some are softer about those things. But Jesus says, this is going to happen. There's going to be all sorts of people who are going to come along and claim to speak in my name and suggest that you follow them and that they know when it's all going to be over, and don't believe them. Don't follow them. Also, you're going to hear all sorts of things about wars and rebellions. But don't be afraid. Those things are going to happen. There's no getting around it. That's the world that you live in. You're going to hear the stories of wars and insurrections, of plagues, of floods, of terrorist attacks, of earthquakes. You're going to hear the stories of all of these things, but don't be afraid. They're going to happen. There's no getting around it. You can't be safe from those things. There's going to be wars between nations. There will be all sorts of natural disasters and weird signs in the sky. That is the world you live in. But don't be afraid. It's going to happen. And you yourselves, if the whole world picture isn't bad enough, you yourselves are going to be arrested and persecuted, imprisoned and put on trial. You're going to be betrayed by family and friends. Some of you are even going to be executed. You will be hated because you follow me. But don't be afraid. All of those things are just the world that we live in. Don't be afraid. Even though Jesus had painted a really grim, grim picture. There's this story earlier in the Gospels about Jesus and his disciples. They went out in a boat into the middle of the lake, the Sea of Galilee. And Jesus decided he would have a nap in the back of the boat. And this great big storm suddenly raised up. And the boat was like, it was close to tipping over. And the disciples were afraid they were going to drown. And they look at Jesus and he's sleeping in the back. So as well as going, how on earth can he sleep through this? They also, how can he sleep through this? we're going to drown, and he's sleeping. So they go and they wake him up, and they're like, Jesus, how can you sleep through this? We need your help. We need you to rescue us, to save us. And what does Jesus do? He doesn't go, oh, I didn't realize there was a storm. Let me help you. He looks at them, and he goes, where is your faith? Are you really so afraid that you would wake me up from my nap? And then almost you get this sense of him just being frustrated. He goes, okay, storm, just be quiet, because now I clearly have some teaching to do. But the point isn't, why did they need to be afraid? The storm wasn't going to hurt them. Maybe the storm was going to drown them. Maybe the storm was going to capsize the boat. Jesus' point isn't, don't be afraid because nothing bad is going to happen. Jesus' point is, don't be afraid because when the bad things happen, you are still secure in the arms of your Father in heaven. No matter what's going on in the world around you, whether it's wars or insurrections or rumors of wars, whether it's famines or plagues or floods or earthquakes, whether it's people that have betrayed you, whether it's people that would persecute you for your faith or hate you for your faith, whatever it is that's going on, you don't have to be afraid. Not because, well, you're Christians and nothing bad will happen to you. No, in fact, you're Christians, more bad stuff is going to happen to you. Don't be afraid because that's not the end of the story. Because your God is King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and they can kill this body, but they cannot kill you. This is what we read last week, that God is a God of the living, not a God of the dead. If the worst happens and you die, that doesn't stand in God's way. He says it to his disciples in the boat. Why are you afraid? Don't you have any faith? Don't you hold on to this idea that this isn't all there is? And he says the same thing here. He says, yeah, you can look and gaze in glory at the temple, but it doesn't have any power. It's just a temporary thing. And he says to them, all these things are going to happen because that's the world you live in. But you don't have to be afraid. You can't be safe from all of those things. It's the world you live in. But let me tell you what you can rest in. God is King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and he is the God of the living and not of the dead. When Israel was preparing to enter into the promised land, way back Moses had led them out of Egypt and they'd been wandering around in the wilderness. And at first they decided not to go into the promised land because they sent some scouts ahead and they saw that it was filled with giants. And so they were really afraid. And because they were so afraid, they ended up spending 40 years in the wilderness with God shaping them into a nation. And the time had finally come that their time of wandering was done, and they were going to cross over the Jordan River and finally enter into the land that had been promised to Abraham, one of their long ago ancestors. Moses wasn't going with them, but he had a few final speeches to kind of motivate them on their way. And in one of those speeches, what Moses said to the people of Israel was this: be strong and bold. Have no fear or dread of them, the giants, because it is the Lord your God who goes with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Don't be afraid, because God Almighty himself goes with you. Will things be hard? Yes. Will some of you die in some of the wars? Yes. But you don't have to be afraid, because your God is bigger than their God. Your God is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Over and over and over again throughout history, things get really, really, really bad. But our God is bigger than the worst things that we can possibly imagine. I was at our annual pastors' conference this last week, and at one point they had a table set in the middle and all of us sitting around it, and the communion elements were there. There was bread, there was juice, because we're Baptists, and it was all sitting there. And we were just reflecting quietly on some time. And when people were ready, they stood up to walk to serve each other communion. And I was sitting and I was watching some of the people who walked past me. And I just, every once in a while it happens to me, I became overwhelmed by the pain that was in that room. It hit me when I saw one woman who I've known for many years who lost her husband this last summer after decades of marriage. And it was just like pain and grief just surrounded her and weighed her down. And I was looking at my friends who were in front of me, who for the last year and a half have had a small minority from their own church just launching extraordinary attacks against them, accusing them of all sorts of things, slandering them, trying to destroy them and the church in the process. And on top of that, they're suffering from the wife. She has she's lived with chronic pain for 26 years. And every time they start to get ahead, something else hits them. And I was looking at somebody else who had experienced incredible betrayal, and somebody else who was in pain for something else. And just all the people and all of their stuff surrounding this table on which was broken bread and juice that symbolized the blood of Christ. And I was struck by the fact that there was nothing I could do to take away their pain and their hurt. There was nothing that anybody could do. There was nothing they could do about it. They just had to sit with it and know that God had been there himself through Jesus and was sitting in it with them. And as I talked to various friends who were struggling with things, that's enough. See, Jesus himself was betrayed. He was abandoned. He was slandered. He was humiliated. He was mocked. They tried to drive him out. They tried to destroy him. He was beaten. He was eventually crucified. Jesus has been through every single thing that we could possibly imagine. And at no point does he ever say, "But if you follow me, I'll take those things away." Instead, he says, "Get used to it, because this is the world that you live in. There are all sorts of horrors in the world at large and that will be in your life itself. But don't be afraid, because I am with you." In Moses' words, "Be strong and bold. Have no fear or dread, because it's the Lord your God who goes with you. He will not fail you. He will not forsake you." This is the hope in today's scripture. We experience hard stuff. We get afraid of what could happen, what might happen. But the fear does us no good. There is hope in the crucifixion of Jesus, because it's through the crucifixion that we discover that death does not reign, that God can overcome death with life, and that that's what God chooses to do. It's through the crucifixion that we learn that our God reigns, that our God is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, that he is with us in the dark times and in the brilliant, bright times. Do not be afraid, for the Lord your God is with you. Amen.